Sheila. I'm an alcoholic. I am so grateful to be sober today. Welcome to Monday night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more, tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. And we hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. I had forgotten in a matter of weeks just how beautiful our speaker is. Stunning. And I appreciate your willingness to share your experience, strength, and hope with us. And let's give Lori a big welcome.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Lori. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I'm nervous. Everybody kept asking me. I'm extremely nervous. I have a disease that centers in my mind, and I've got a huge committee up there, and half of them are telling me I'm going to do great. I'm a good alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. The other half is telling me I'm a fraud and I'm going to do terrible. And they're fighting with each other. And I don't know if anybody can relate to you to that. That is pretty much what I struggle with my entire life. My first sponsor told me when I get asked to do my story to just pray and come up here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And so I hope that God will use my story, and something I say tonight will help somebody. I do have a couple notes just in case I go completely blind. I grew up in Michigan. Everything that we did growing up involved alcohol. My parents drank. When we were younger, everybody drank. There was, you know, alcohol everywhere. So I never knew what it was like for there not to be alcohol. As I got older, I realized and called my father an alcoholic. However, I didn't even have a clue what alcoholic was. I just knew that people that went to AA were quitters, because that's what we talked about, and that would never be me. Just a normal, I was middle child. I had an older brother, younger sister. I had another older brother and sister that grew up, but not in our family. My mom was a nurse. My dad worked at Sears. He was a salesman. And just a normal, I mean, I don't know. Down in the South, I think you guys haven't made it. It's so beautiful down here. The sun shines up there. It's not sunny for many, many months. So winters were miserable, but for as far back as I can remember, and my earliest memories are like kindergarten, I never felt like I fit in. Like, just inherently did not belong anywhere that I was. Sometimes that even included, like, with my family. Like, I always felt like they were leaving me out, and I didn't belong, and I was uncomfortable. I was a good kid because I was a middle child, and I wanted to make everybody happy and have everybody get along. So I did everything in the right order, went to school, didn't drink, didn't get in trouble. My first time I can remember drinking, I drank some beer out of the refrigerator with a friend, and then that was kind of cool, but I was like, I don't know, maybe ninth grade. And then maybe around 10th grade, I went to a party and got really drunk on Bartles and James wine coolers in the hot tub. And I know I blacked out, and I know I got sick, and that's all I can remember. I must have liked it because I drank again, but not very often. But looking back, every single time I drank to get drunk from the very first time. And that was like a realization that, like, oh, I forgot. I don't know if I told you my sobriety date. It's January 1st, 2018. Whenever I drank, so there was just schizophrenic, I remember, you know, little memories of getting drunk with kids in high school, and I always got really drunk, blackout drunk, and I don't know how I got home, but somebody always took care of me. Went off to college, didn't really drink a lot, but when I drank, I got drunk. And somebody always took care of me, and I'm not sure how that happened or whatnot, but still that feeling of not belonging was always there. And I can remember when I went back to my hometown, you know, it's the kind of hometown that has bars on the corners, just like you see in the shows. I remember going into the bar, and there were all the kids from school. And I was like, look it, they're going to see me drink. Because, you know, I was such a goody-goody that I don't know that anybody ever thought, you know, in my head, that's what I thought. I thought everybody thought I was a goody-goody. But, you know, we don't ever really know what people think about us. But I remember just thinking I was so cool, and I'm going to drink, and I'm going to hang out at the bar, and that's what I did, and got drunk and drank with my family. Always ended up blacking out. There was just never, I never could get enough alcohol. And I remember when I came in the rooms, and they said, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. I was like, what? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I drink a lot more than once. And then it hit me. It's the first drink that I put in my body, and then that drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes me. I did everything. I changed careers. Like, through all of it, I just never, no matter what I did, I never felt like I fit in. College didn't fit in. Got my first job. I just didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like anybody liked me. Didn't think I did anything right. But when I would drink, I would loosen up and I'd feel kind of comfortable. I kind of thought I was kind of cool because, again, where I grew up, everybody drank. Like, I'm not saying everybody around me was an alcoholic, but everybody drank. And so I didn't know what life without alcohol was like, and that is what kept me drinking for a lot of years, because I had no example of what that would be, and so I thought life would end. If I quit drinking, life would be over. I changed careers, I changed relationships, I changed places, I did all of them. I moved around the country, changed different jobs, different boyfriends, always looking for that next thing was going to be the thing that made me really, really happy, right? That next job was going to be the job that was going to make me happy. The next location, the next whatever it was always, when I get here, I will be happy. And I never got there. You know, I mean, I'm there now because I found AA. But when I was drinking, I never could ever get comfortable in my own skin, ever. When I came in the rooms, people talked about, you can watch your drinking and you can see where did your morals kind of start going downhill. And when my career started taking off, I saw that my morals went the other direction. I think I was an alcoholic. I think I drank alcoholically from the very first time I had those drinks in the hot tub. But my behavior, I didn't care about other people. I was looking out for me. I hurt men. I hurt my family. But everything was under control. Like, I didn't, you know, like, the job was going good, I was succeeding, I was climbing the ladder. You know, if I broke up with one guy or got divorced from one husband, I had another one waiting. I would never have, like, switched any of those things without one already lined up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would never have just been on my own. God forbid, that would have been horrible. But looking back, I mean, gosh, I wish I had. But, so I could see where, like, my moral decisions were going downhill. You know, I was doing a lot of things that I never would have imagined I would have done. I was trying everything I could do to figure out how to be happy. I was doing self-help books. I was going to church. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't just set my mind to it and set a goal. Because everything I'd ever done, you know, I'm going to get a degree from college, so okay, I make my goal and I get it, you know, or I'm going to win, do some sport and I'm going to be good at it. But drinking, I could never, you know, and I'd ask around, do y'all think maybe I have you think I drink too much?
No.
No, you like to have fun. I mean, you know, maybe have ice water in between drinks, or maybe we should eat. You know, all these ideas that they had, I was always like, why? Like, why? Like, it never, my sister would always give me these, I mean, I love her because she's not an alcoholic. We grew up in the same family, and it's amazing to see how two people can be so completely different. You know, it'd always be like, no, let's just drink water between, or let's just, you know, let's go out and have, you know, a dinner before we go out. And I'm always like, I didn't even think it was weird that I thought that was weird that she wanted to do that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just bizarre what was going on up here. But the book talks about easier, softer ways. I tried all sorts of easier, softer ways to not drink. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I didn't know that I was trying to control my drinking when I was doing these. I would count. I'd have a journal and I'd write down. Recently, I started throwing stuff away because I'm like feeling like I want to just, I don't know, me and my friend Lisa were texting the other day and I went on vacation. Whenever I live in a hotel, I want to get rid of stuff. Like, I'm like, I can live simple in this one little suitcase and it's so wonderful. So I was going through old journals and I've got old journals and I ripped out pages to keep to remember of, I mean, going back to like right out of high school, right out of college, not high school, but college, I think this year I want to drink less. I'm like, whoo, sign, red flag. Like, God was trying to reach me, even though I didn't know it. Like, I'd be called, I grew up as a Christian. I grew up in a church-going family. So the God that I started AA with was the God that my parents had taught me of. When I came in, I was like, oh, I got step one, two, and three. Easy. Well, one was pretty easy. I mean, I just had to look at what happened when I drank. I passed out. I got drunk. And two and three, I was just like, I got God. I grew up in the church. Check, check. Let's move on. Let's go forward. Let's make this list. You know, that part, it took me, I had the base foundation. I believe there was something bigger. But at the time of all of my drinking and before I came into AA, I didn't have a personal relationship with God. You know, I can remember moving from Michigan to Atlanta, Georgia in 19, like, I don't know, a long time ago. People from work would ask me to go Bible study, and I'd be like, what? No. It's, you go to church on Sunday, and then God goes away, and you do your stuff, and then, you know, you bring it back out when you go on Sunday. But being exposed to, like, people who, like, lived religious lives was new to me from growing up in the North. So I remember that being weird, but I kept on just, you know, I didn't really go to church, but I believed. And the other thing I really remember a lot is, in the end of my drinking, maybe a couple years, you know, I'm asking around in the family, do you guys think I have a drinking problem? Nobody thinks I have a drinking problem because they don't know that I'm drinking every night by myself at my house and passing out and blacking out. And I've got a little girl. It's by the grace of God that, you know, I didn't do something to really hurt her. I would pray, and I've heard it called foxhole prayers. I had never heard that until I got to AA, but I would pray, please, God, just tonight, like, let this be the end. Tomorrow, let me wake up and not drink. I wake up the next day feeling like crap, and I'm like, this is the day. Please, God, let this be the day. But by noon, I was already starting to think about drinking. And there's where the problem started, right? I thought about drinking all the time. I didn't even know I was doing it. You know, the things that I was doing when I was drinking, like going on vacation with my family and coming up with reasons to get in the car and go somewhere. Oh, we ran out of something. Just so I could get alcohol and sneak it into the hotel rooms and just have it someplace where I could get it where my family didn't. I mean, I'm sure they knew I was drinking. But, I mean, I would hide beer bottles behind the beds. I hid alcohol in my house. And I grew up with a man who had a desk, and in that desk was handles. And I was never going to be him. Never, ever would I grow up to be my father. Until I was in my bathroom and I'm filling up the Yeti, which I'm convinced the Yeti was invented for moms to go to sporting events with alcohol. And I'd fill up my Yeti and I'd be in my closet and I'd be like, what am I doing? And I'd wake up the next day and I'd be like, where did I hide all the empties? Because I had to go on an Easter egg hunt and collect them all so my husband wouldn't find them. And it was a constant. You know what I mean? Obsessed with drinking all the time, but I didn't even see it. Didn't even know it. I drank alone. I'd go out with the girls after tennis and maybe have one or two, but I always made sure I had a lot, a case, a couple bottles of wine. You know, I always made sure there was alcohol at the house. And I guess what kept me in that was the fear of what is life like without alcohol. I couldn't imagine it. I was just a tornado, like the book talks about. I would run through people's lives. I didn't give any thought to what I was doing, whether I was drunk or sober. I didn't give any thought to what I did to other people. I was only worried about what was Lori getting, how was Lori feeling, what did you not do that, you know, impacted me, like you didn't appreciate me, or whatever. It still blows my mind how selfish I was. And like I said, I tried all the self-help books. I tried Willpower. I tried asking others. And it wasn't till my bottom. In years before I hit my bottom, everybody has a bottom. I had to make a bottom. I had to make a bottom of my own. But I had some mom friends reach out and tell me about AA. I can't remember some of them why. Like, I'm supposed to share the story. Because I never drank with these people. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they'd see me drunk. So I must have shared some of my concerns, and then they would talk about it. A dear friend would call every 6 months and say, hey, and she was somebody that I had actually drank with, and she got sober, and she'd call me about every 6 months. Hey, I'm going to go to a meeting today. You want to go? Nope. My mom's boyfriend's daughter was in the program in Florida, and she had given me a small travel-sized big book one time when I was visiting there, probably 2 years before I got sober. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I put it in the glove compartment. I said, I might read this at red light. But I had zero interest in getting sober. My friend who I kept asking me, she recalls that I told her one time, I said, the difference between you and me is you want to be sober and I don't. I had zero desire to give up alcohol. Then moved a lot, and my husband and I live in Atlanta, and I'm working at the church. I have just a contract job helping put groups together. I love it. I can remember when they asked me to come in and interview. I was like, these people have no idea who they're asking to come work for them. And I was mad, this other part of my brain said, this is perfect. You can't go out and be a fool and drink and do all this stuff because you work at the church. Like, I thought this was my solution to drinking. I really did. I was like, I won't drink like I did if I'm working for the church because I wouldn't want to do that to the church. But all that did was drive me back home drinking more and more by myself. Like, but in my head, I thought, well, this will work. I had this fear of dying. Meeting, for me, it's Jesus. Meeting him and being like, whoa, what? You know what I mean? My fear was waking up and being dead. More than that, I was fearful I was going to kill my daughter because by the end, I could care less if I died, to be honest. You know, that would have been a blessing if God would have taken me because I was so miserable. But I didn't want to kill her. She was only, I think, 4 when I got sober. So that fear kept getting bigger and bigger. My drinking was starting earlier and earlier. One time I went to go pick her up from school, and I couldn't drive. And thank the Lord, a neighbor was in the subdivision, and I called, and I said, will you take me up to the school to get my daughter? I can't drive. It was like 2:30 in the afternoon. She took me up there. I went in. I got my kid. I still don't know how the school didn't, like there's all these things where I'm like, God's protection was over me, and I didn't even know it, because I don't know how those people didn't know I had been drinking, but I went and got my kid. So all these things were starting to happen. I don't know why my husband and daughter went to church one Sunday without me, but when I came home from wherever I was, my husband sat me down and said, the church has a program for people who drink too much. And I almost signed you up. This is the church I'm working at, by the way. I'm like, what? You cannot tell those people that I drink? Like, it really baffled me that he would want to go tell these people about my drinking. Because he was the problem. I wasn't me, right? If he would just appreciate me and know everything I've sacrificed for him and my daughter, well, then I wouldn't drink like I do. Like, I really, these were delusions that were in my head that I believed. Like, if they would just behave, I would drink normal. Him saying he was going to go to church really kind of got me a little bit, I better look at this. And then the final thing that really, I was an elf at the school thing with some other moms. And that afternoon, it was a Friday before break, there was a really bad car accident outside of our subdivision. And it closed the road, and I was sitting in the chair, and my phone rang, and one of the moms I was working with, because remember, in my head, I think nobody knows what's going on. I'm not hurting anybody. One of the moms calls me, and she says, I just want to make sure that wasn't you in that car accident. And I don't remember because I was still pretty hungover, but she let me know that she knew that I had some alcohol in my breath and was probably drinking and not all there in the morning when I was working at school. And that scared me. Because then I was like, the gig's up. People are starting to notice. So I came up with a plan. I don't like my husband. I don't want to quit drinking. I might have a little bit of a problem, but, you know, remember, I called my dad an alcoholic, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I thought that my dad could quit drinking if he loved me enough. So I'm thinking if I get my life figured out, if I get the people in my life figured out, I won't drink like I do, and I'll be fine, and I can go back to being fun, which I don't know when I was ever fun. But I start reaching out to some of these people who I knew were in AA, start asking questions, am I going to lose all my friends? Well, Lori, if you lose all your friends, they were probably drinkers anyways. You know what I mean? Like, they all had great answers, and are you sure it's not a cult? Because I'm like, all of the people that I know that are in AA are really happy. Like, are you sure there's not something weird going on there? No, it's not. We're just happy to not be obsessed with alcohol anymore. I made a decision. I'm like, okay, this will work. I'm going to go to AA for 1 year. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to get divorced. I'm going to get my kid. Life is going to be good, and I can go back to drinking. So I came in the rooms on January 1st, 2018, and I don't know why God did this for me, because I was pretty convinced he hated me. But from that day that I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and picked up my white chip, I'm not going to say I haven't wanted to drink, but I haven't had the obsession. It was probably about 3 months in, I was sitting in the meeting, and they're talking about how selfish alcoholics are. And I was like, whoa. I'm in the wrong place, because I'm selfless. I quit my job. I've moved all over the country. I'm raising my daughter. Like, you people got the wrong person. And then I listened to what they were sharing, and I was like, oh, that's selfish? Like, it was like all these light bulbs were going off, and I was like, I'm super selfish. Now, it still took me a little while, but I was listening to what people were saying, and it amazed me that there were other people that felt like I did. There were other people that didn't feel like they fit in wherever they went. There were other people that hid their alcohol. There were other people that were just full of shame and remorse all the time. I didn't even realize that I kept drinking because I wanted to cover up all that ick. If I just kept drinking and not feeling, then, you know, I wouldn't have to acknowledge that I was kind of a piece of crap. So I stayed in the program. I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps. After some time, I started doing service work, leading meetings, being discussion leader, and I loved it. I loved everything about AA. I loved the way I felt about myself when I went in the rooms. I liked all the people I met. Never felt like I didn't belong. I had 2 months sobriety, and I went to Australia to visit a friend. And I, like, called strangers, and they'd come get me and, like, take me to meetings. It was the coolest thing ever. It was just this experience, and still, I wasn't going to stay. I was just going to do a year. But the longer I stayed in the program, the more I worked the steps, and the more I talked to other alcoholics, it was exceedingly clear that I was an alcoholic, a real alcoholic. I have an obsession of the mind, and when I start thinking about it, I can't stop thinking about it. And then when I put it in my body, I can't stop putting it in my body. I worked the steps. And I tried to make friends. You know, I came in the program. I wasn't, like, lonely, like, from friendships or anything like that. But, I mean, I had a goal. You know what I mean? I didn't need you guys. I was just going to check these boxes and get my life in order. And what a blessing I didn't even expect was the friendships that I have in these rooms. You know, these ladies that, like, drove from South Atlanta. Because I know y'all think we live far, far away. It's really not that far. When we leave here at night, it takes us about 40 minutes to get home. So, I mean, you know, some of these women I'm extremely close with. They know a lot of my deep, dark secrets. Some of them I talk to every week. Some of them every day. Some of them I see just at our Monday. Some of them not often, but I bet you any of them I could call. If I needed somebody, I've got a whole bunch of people. Before AA, I don't know who I would have called. I had a mom, I have a sister, and I could call them. But I don't know if you guys have ever had it where people get sick of your self-pity and your victimhood. Like, I didn't even know, like, what I was doing. But, man, I have the ego that's like, oh, poor Lori. And, you know, I recall there's a part in the book that talks about relying on other people too much. I relied on everybody too much. I wanted my mom to know what the right answer was and to tell me what to do. I wanted my sister to fix me. I wanted my therapist to fix. Like, I just wanted, when it talks about our instincts, I couldn't get my needs met. I didn't know how to do it. I missed all those classes growing up about how to take care of Lori. So I drank. What's it like today? I mean, I have hope. That's what you guys gave me when I came in and I listened and I got engaged. Like, I have this hope that it can be better. And I can remember the day sitting in the parking lot. It's in between Kroger's and Target in our little town. And I called up I was already in therapy and my therapist was already telling me that I needed to go to AA. But I called up this hotline and I'm like, I don't want to live. I don't want to die. I just want to get in my car and run away. That's where I was. I just wanted out. Loved my husband, loved my daughter, but they told me, like, I just couldn't deal anymore. And that sweet lady helped me take some steps medically to, like, get safe and then get into the program. And I don't feel that hopelessness anymore. You know, I don't feel, like, life is not sunshine and rainbows and happiness all the time. And I can remember the first time I was like, whoo, I got my pink cloud. And somebody said, this too shall pass. And I was like, why are you killing my joy? But I'm glad that that person did, because now when I have low time, I know that this too shall pass. Like, I came into the rooms like this, and now I might, like, be like this. I'm never going to be like this. Never. I'm an emotional person. I'm just, I'm very passionate, and like my husband says, I'm very sensitive. And the two people that I'm most sensitive with are my husband and my daughter, who happen to be the same husband that I wanted to get divorced from. I got this connection with the higher power. A friend told me I needed to have a God of my experience, a God of mine. And I didn't really quite get what that meant. I'm like, I got this God, you know, I was taught about him growing up. The more I worked, about 2 years into my sobriety, maybe 3 years, I wanted to go deeper. I went to this retreat in Birmingham with a bunch of the people that I know, and it was kind of an eye-opening experience. It was very spiritual. They went through the steps real fast. It was my first experience was doing something like that, and I just wanted more. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. I just couldn't get enough. I wanted more. I wanted more conferences. I wanted more time with the women. I just wanted to know more about the Big Book. At that time, I got a new sponsor because I wanted somebody to take me through something that's called the Big Book Awakening. And nothing, like, I love my sponsor I had. She got me sober. She's still a good friend of mine. I just wanted somebody to take me a little deeper. So I got a new sponsor, and this woman changed my life. Like, she could be my daughter. She has way more sobriety, but she could be my daughter. And she had experiences in her life that she brought into mine to help me see my life differently. And we went through the steps. And that's when I got a God of my understanding. I got a God that I could see and show up. And in the Big Book, when it talks, my favorite part is, like, God is either everything or he's nothing. I'm like, what? That's kind of weird. Like, I mean, I just want to take the parts I like and the other stuff I want to get rid of. But now I really try super hard to look at, where's God? And an example, like, my house flooded. And I'm like, okay, where's God in this? Like, this is terrible. And... but once I got all cleaned and got through it, and I was seeing little places where I think maybe God was. Like, maybe he was there to put us outside so that we could see some things going on in our neighborhood. Like, I don't know. But I know that I don't always know what God wants for me or what his will is for me, except for that I know he doesn't want me to be drunk. I know that 100% that God does not want me to be drunk. So today I have this awesome higher power that speaks to me through you guys. I have an open mind to accept the fact that every single person in here has a different higher power. But somehow I think they all get up there and talk and they're like, hey, what's yours doing? you know, like mine's got this whole conversation going on in her head right now. And what's yours thinking about, you know? Because we're always thinking about something. I mean, this brain just keeps going. The more sobriety I get, though, the calmer it's getting, the more peaceful it's getting. Where I'm at in my sobriety is I don't want to drink. I'm not going to say there haven't been times when some people have come over and drug me off the floor because I'm crying. because my life is out of control with something, my marriage, my child. I want a job. I want to be important. You know, like life things. And I don't have alcohol to deal with it anymore. And so I use the tools that you guys have taught me. And sometimes one of the tools is calling somebody and saying, hey, come over. So I'm working on my emotional sobriety and my spiritual growth and my relationship with trusting my higher power. I lived for so long in Lori's will. I wanted it Lori's way, and it's taken me a lot of years to see that. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I graduated from college, so I'm kind of smart. But, like, that whole thinking back to the first year, I really thought I was selfless, you know? And this book, I'm reading through this book, and this book is talking about all these different ways of self being bad. And I'm like, oh, I can relate to all of that. Like, the stuff that was in the book. Like, this, I love this book. I mean, I don't know. If you're not in this book and you're not, like, in love with what you're reading, get somebody to go through it with you. Because there's some, I'll read something with a sponsee out of it. Oh, I don't ever remember reading that before. You know, it's like it comes alive. I'm glad that for some reason when I came in, I was willing, I was honest, and I was open. I think that those three things, because when I came in and I already had that deadline of a year, I was like, well, I'm not in a hurry. You know, everything I've ever done in my life, I wanted to get to the top as fast as I could. The part in the book that talks about were you ever a worker among workers? I was never a worker among workers. I always wanted to be the best because I thought if I was the best, then I would like myself. If I got there. And so I came in here and since I already given myself a year, I'm like, I'll just sit back and do it and participate, but I'm not in any rush. And I'm really glad for that because I didn't miss anything. Do you know what I mean? I took it slow. I read the whole book. I read all the stories in the back. I got the 12 and 12. If somebody recommended another book like Living Sober or I'm scared to even, you know, like mention because I don't know which ones are approved and not approved, but anything that anybody recommended to me, I did. I read it. If you told me to call you because you had experience with whatever problem I was doing, I was on the horn. I was calling you. Like, if somebody made a suggestion to me, I did it. I'm still very active in working my program. Right now I'm going through the 12 and 12, and I'm trying to answer every single question. That's really hard. There's a lot of questions in there. I have this sense of belonging today and a sense of purpose. I still don't know what God wants me to be when I grow up, but I know He wants me to be sober, and I know He wants me to show up in AA, and I know He wants me to carry the message to somebody else who is sick and suffering, because I think about my dad, who I called an alcoholic to his face. I had no idea what an alcoholic was. I had no idea that my dad couldn't stop drinking by himself. You know, I just, all those years that I thought if you just loved me enough, you'd quit. And you know what? I didn't love my kid enough to quit, you know, until I got AA and God helped me and you guys helped me. And, like, there's nothing better than living this way. I love AA. I wish I could. I'm in this place. I got things back, right? Like, you get sober, and I got my marriage back, and I got my child, and I don't get to do as much with my friends and in meetings and in service work, you know, and I miss that. And I like, look forward to that season when I'm an empty nester, and I'm like, TSR, and going to the conventions and doing all the fun stuff. Like, that's exciting to me. Like, this life is so great. I'm so thankful for AA. I'm thankful that every day is not a good day. I still struggle. I still struggle with control over, you know, people in my family wanting them to do what I want them to do and to see that I'm so selfless. But today I have a new dialogue. I tell myself, hey, Lori, you have got to figure out what the problem is because you're demanding more from them than they should have to give you. Now, I go through life today and I don't want to drink. That's not my first answer to every problem. And that is, it's a miracle. It is a true miracle that I don't want to drink today. And I don't want to run out to the liquor store every time something does not go my way. I'm still only 6 years old, so I've got a long, long way to go. I really appreciate you guys letting me share my story.
Lori, that was wonderful, awesome. Thank you. And I'll bet right now, those two Loris, they're not fighting. You know you did a great job, right? You know, we look for the similarities. You and I, on the inside, are identical twins. And the hope that you got, and so many of the things. Thank you so much for sharing yourself with us. Beautiful.
I used to hate my pain. Avoid the feeling like a winter rain. I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word, until the day I could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend. My broken heart could be my friend. On the other side, I will rise above a mountain, here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, there is peace beneath the pain. A tender tear that I can't explain, washing away the fearful wounds, bearing a light for my life to bloom.